It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey parents, it is so good to have you with us for another episode of the Wonder of Parenting podcast, a brain science approach to parenting. I'm Tim Wright, along as always with Dr. Michael Gurian. Michael, welcome once again to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tim. Thanks, everyone.
We want to say a very special thanks to our friends up in Seattle, the Seattle area, the center, a place of hope. For those of you who ever have issues where you feel like you're just stuck and you need someone to chat with or some longer-term care for those you love, when it comes to things like eating disorders or anxiety or depression, whatever it might be, that's a good place to check out. They are rated one of the top 10 clinics in the country for treating depression, and they do good work up there. And there's a link to them on our website, wonderofparenting.com, wonderofparenting.com. So special thanks to them for being sponsors for us. Michael, today we're going to tackle a topic again that has come up before, but I think we're going to go a little deeper on it today. And this has come up in a few of our listeners' questions, and it has come up on our Facebook page. And if you're not a part of our Facebook page, by the way, that's also on wonderofparenting.com. And we do some things there that we can't do during the podcast. So we'd love to have you join that. And so I'm going to start out with a fairly specific question, and then we'll broaden it. And this comes to us from one of our listeners, Leslie, who's currently living in Melbourne, or Melbourne. Now, you've been to Australia, is that right?
Me?
Yeah.
I have never been, no.
You've never been. Well, then I have to tell one of my Australia stories then, especially okay. Here for Leslie because she's in Melbourne. But I've been to Australia several times, mainly to Adelaide, where we've got some friends, and then Sydney. But we did get to Melbourne in the early 1990s one time, and Leslie will appreciate this. I was able to go to a game at the MCG, the Melbourne Cricket Grounds, an iconic stadium, to see the Essendon Bombers take on the Collingwood Magpies in Australian rules football, and was hooked on that game. Almost 100,000 people in that stadium. And We Americans have a hard time getting our brains around Australian rules football, but once you get it, it's an absolutely fantastic game. And so, Leslie, we're glad you're listening to us. We noticed that you have an email address that's got the UK in it, so I'm guessing that you are from England and perhaps living now in Australia for a while. So here's her question, and we're going to land on this for a little bit, and then we'll broaden it. And so here's what she said. Thanks for your podcast. I love listening to your podcast. We sure appreciate that. Great information for parents. My son has recently started school, prep school, and I find there are a lot of helicopter cotton baller parents. Now, I'd never heard the phrase cotton baller. I love that. Cotton baller parents at his school who don't allow the kids to play with sticks, rough play, or even jailkeeper, or climb too high in the playground equipment. I find it so frustrating. I'm fine if my son plays with sticks, as long as he doesn't hit other kids. He can climb trees, and I'm all for rough play, as long as the other child is having fun too, and it's a game. I would love to hear more information on this. I think risk-taking is good for kids, but struggling with the other parents that might think it's too dangerous. What are your views, advice on boys and risk-taking, risky play? And we'll expand that out to girls as well. So, Michael, you and I grew up in a very different era, I think. Mm-hmm. I know in our school when I was a kid, we had jungle gyms, and they were built on tar. Here in Phoenix, they're all built on sand or really soft rubber. We could climb all over the place. We could play kickball. We could run around. And we usually had two recesses a day. There was an understanding that kids need to move around, they need to play, but we do live sort of in an era of safety, and some of that's really good, but we have seen, I think, in our schools, a diminishment of recess. We've certainly seen a lot of schools eliminating things like dodgeball or playing soccer where kids might possibly get hurt. And I think that there is some concern about risky play that boys tend to participate in. So talk to us about the brain science and risky play, especially for kids, and then we're going to broaden that out to free range play.
Okay. Well, I it's a great question, and it's so interesting that we're doing it again. It's been a few months, I think, but it's going to keep coming up because people all over, clearly all over the world, are I think sort of ambivalent about or unsure about what safety is, and so on the surface, safety is don't let anyone touch each other so that no one hurts each other, right? Yeah. And on the surface, our cultures have sort of decided that that's what safety is, and that there, and safety is also don't really say anything to each other, right? So, yes. You know, political correctness. Okay, so that extends to don't say anything because that's going to be seen as aggression or violence. And so the pendulum has really swung, as Leslie is getting at. It's swung far, far, far away from the reality of child growth, of human growth. So she's making a really good distinction that we want to make with everyone and talk about, which is the distinction between aggression play, risky play, the distinction between that and violence. And that's really the only important distinction. If people want to distill it down, it's that. If a kid is doing something that's violent, that's trying to destroy another kid, okay, that crosses the line in terms of play. And she's hinting at it when she says, "I don't let him hit other people with sticks." Clear, you know, she's got the line. She set a line. That's the line, and that's a great line. It's the right line. But all this other stuff that these other parents are saying is too dangerous, or the school is saying is too dangerous. Perhaps they're worried about liability and being sued. And all the stuff about helicopter parenting, you know, I just think the science is really on our side here and on Leslie's side, that it's crucial for the development of kids that they take lots of risks. And it's crucial that that we understand that play is a part of how the brain develops. So play is work to the brain. Play is development to the brain. And taking risks is crucial for maturation. It's crucial for resilience building. This is true for all children, boys and girls. It's crucial. Now, males will tend to take more physical risks, so there's a lot more adult corrective behavior toward males, which is, you know, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, that's bad, don't do that. So we do say that more to males because they take more physical risks when they play. We can have a lot of pretty aggressive females and free range play females who take those risks, and we say, don't do that, don't do that. So I would like to see all of our systems kind of along Leslie's line. I would like to see all the parents, all the teachers, everyone go through the sort of internal training and group training, and so that they can reinvigorate play and understand the importance of risky play, for the brain and for brain development, for closing synapses. And in fact, if you ask me to, I'll do a specific thing with the frontal lobe and executive decision making. Should I go into that?
Yes, I think that would be really interesting.
Okay, so to pick one way in which it's so great for the brain that kids do this risky play is the frontal lobe. So the prefrontal lobe, the frontal cortex, all of those parts of the brain are the executive decision making parts of the brain. And maturation is very much about making sure that the pathways between where the emotive centers are in the midbrain and even the brainstem, which is, you know, kind of controlling our physical movement, the cerebellum, that the pathways exist between these emotive centers and these physical centers up to the frontal cortex, which is where this executive decision making is. So we mature in part by connecting parts of our brain, and especially by connecting a lot of those parts of our brain to the frontal cortex, so that adults make different decisions than kids, right? When we say that's an adult, well, part of what we're saying is, oh, that adult is making good executive decisions, good moral decisions, good character decisions. And that's crucial. Well, play actually is a big part of how the brain creates that connectivity or fills in the synapses into those pathways. And if kids are just sitting or if they're overprotected and they're not out playing and taking risks, that is less opportunity for their brains to close those pathways. So they get to be adults, you know, 20 years later, they get to be adults and they really haven't closed those pathways very well. They're not going to be as mature. They're not going to make as good adult decisions. And people don't realize that part of how they close the pathways is through play. That's how important this stuff is.
So let's dig a little bit into boys in play and how the way that boys tend to play builds resiliency in them. And I think about the Gillette commercial that came out a few months ago that was rather controversial. And it was taking on the Me Too movement. And both you and I had great appreciation for much of what was in that commercial. But there was one scene where there were two little boys who were wrestling. And that was put in the context of toxic masculinity. And the answer to that in that commercial was for one of the men to come over and stop them from wrestling. But that's not good brain science.
No. That was an error in that commercial. I agree with you that other parts of it were really solid. But this is the problem. This is that pendulum swing. It's a problem with our culture that doesn't, it's no longer brain-based. You know, it's so ideological that it does these bizarre things like saying boys wrestling with each other is going to lead to raping women, right? Or is going to lead to sexual assault of women. It's just bizarre stuff. And we all have to kind of fight it. We have to take the good from a commercial like that, and then we have to fight the bad. And so wrestling is a very important part. This kind of physical, aggressive wrestling is a really important part of maturation for the brain. And that's why nature does it. Let's always remember that if we see something happening in nature and it hasn't crossed the line into violence, which is, again, violence is sort of a learned behavior, right? Violence is something that we teach people to be violent. We teach them to hate other people and be violent. But aggression is natural. So if we see something that nature is doing, like guys wrestling with each other as they're growing up, we ought to look at that and go, oh, what's the wisdom of that? I wonder why that goes on all the time. And why that goes on is like 10 podcasts. But one of the reasons that wrestling goes on is that it is helping to create maturation. So as these boys wrestle with each other, they are, as you noted, developing resilience. Resilience is their ability to survive and thrive in an adult world or in any world, which is filled with trauma, difficulty, toughness, responsibilities. You know, you got to have resilience to do well as an adult. And that's a big part of what the wrestling is doing. They kind of hurt each other a little, you know. Again, most of the wrestling does not cross over into violence where they're really beating each other up. Most of it is where they sort of feel a little bit of pain and then they laugh, you know, and then the other one gets on the other one. I had a brother 2 years older and you had brothers, so we know what this is like, you know. And then one day one of us gets the worst of the wrestling, right? And we're like, But then the next day we get the better of the wrestling and it just goes back and forth for a period of 20 years. And that's great for that maturation because then 20 years later, I'm really an adult. You know, I've got resilience. And part of why I have resilience is that I spent so much of my boyhood involved in this aggression play that compelled me to be resilient. If I was stopped from that play, if everyone said, oh, you may not touch each other and do that, then that's 20 years of not getting this resilience building. And so I have to get it somewhere else. And what nature is telling us is that this wrestling is the best way to get it because, of course, every culture does it and every boy does it. And so it's a great way to get it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, and we've referenced before on this show Jean Twenge's book on iGen. And even though she doesn't necessarily talk about nurture and aggression and how that can go together, her research is telling us that our kids are growing up more slowly and they're staying kids longer than any other generation. And part of it is due to some of these things of bubble wrapping our kids and so on.
Now, we knew this back in the 90s, like all the way back in The Wonder of Boys, which came out in 96. I have a section on this about how already we could see that that adolescence was being distended, which means extended, basically, right. That adolescence was going on now for 10, 15 years, and that brain development wasn't completing. It wasn't able to complete at 22 or 23, that in fact for males, that sort of adolescence was lasting all the way until about 30, and for females all the way until 25, 26, 27, females mature quicker. So already back in the 90s, we could see this from the brain development point of view. And now it's 2019, so it's 25 years later and we're still, and it's in a way getting worse. I mean, there's right. Truly, I think, more helicopter parenting now than in 1995. So this is not new. So just to tell people, this is something that we in the sciences have known for decades. And now I think the public has to take control of this and force other people to understand that this is not good for maturation.
Well, and our schools are at somewhat of a disadvantage with particularly, for lack of a better term, cotton bowler parents or helicopter parents who are coming in and are constantly saying, my child isn't safe, we can't have this, we can't have that, or lawsuits. And so the schools are sort of put into a tough position.
Yeah.
And yet you've got parents like Leslie and others who know that our kids got to be out on that playground playing, and they've got to get their bumps and bruises. They've got to learn how life works. And we're going to get to free range play here in a moment. I did want to ask about girls. If wrestling for boys and physical kind of aggression nurtures boys, is verbal sparring the equivalent for girls?
Yeah, well, girls also can wrestle and so on. My sure. daughter's wrestled, so we want to say that. And girls do tend to. I'll make 2 points. One is girls tend to internally mature anyway, in some ways that boys don't. So we do find more of these sorts of aggressive physical external maturation behaviors among males because even like fathers and sons, mothers and sons. Mentors and sons, coaches and boys, we tend to see more of that stuff externalized with boys in their relationships because they don't internally have the mechanisms like menstruation, these internal mechanisms that females have that mature their brains. So I want to say that, and that partly explains why it is males do so much more of it than females. Of course, testosterone is the hormonal reason. But then in terms of the verbal, yeah, females, they mature more quickly. Their verbal centers, all of that stuff starts working more quickly in general than males, not always, but in general. And they move toward relying more on their frontal. Let's remember that when we scan the brains of 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old males and females, you scan those brains and you see that the female brain already is doing double or triple the amount of work in the frontal lobe than the male brain. So I just want to repeat that when you scan female brains, and especially adolescent female brains, they're already doing much more of the brain's work in the frontal lobe, which is where executive decision making is, which is also where a number of the word centers are that they'll utilize. So whereas males are doing more in the limbic, down in the brainstem, more in the body, less in the frontal. And And this is probably the primary brain difference that applies here, because females are already doing more of that stuff, that thinking and those words in the frontal. And so, yeah, they become quite nasty to each other. And I have argued, as you know, and we've done a program on it, I bet we'll do more, about how this is how they're maturing themselves through girl drama. Now, when that girl drama becomes violent, then it crosses the line again, right? But just like when the boy hits another boy, that crosses the line. But when, but a lot of the girl drama and a lot of the sort of nastiness that we don't like, that I certainly did not like with my daughters when they were growing up with others, but a lot of it is in the normal range for girls, because they are, as you've hinted, they're relying a lot on words, and they're relying a lot on the connectivity up in the frontal and all these judgments that they're having of each other and themselves. And they're having to work through that over a period of that sort of 10 to 20 during adolescence. And that's a large part of why I think they rely more on the verbal to do that maturation. The area where boys do rely on the verbal for maturation that's sort of unsung and sometimes is overreacted to would be the one-upping. Males will tend to hierarchically one-up each other. So in other words, find the weakness in each other and push on that, you know, like you shorty pants, or you, right? They do yep. that. And it's hierarchical. What they're doing is they're pushing at the weakness and what they perceive as the weakness, and they're trying to get the guy to push back. So males tend to be sort of hierarchical when they use words more, and it's in shorter bursts. Females tend to use more words, and they tend to be almost globally nasty, depending on who they have targeted.
So we're going to move to free range play here in a moment. And, but I do want to just summarize again that what you're saying is that, risky play is good. It's developmental. It builds resilience. But there's a huge difference between risky play or fun wrestling, whatever it might be, and violence. So let's just state that yeah. one more time.
Yeah. Yeah. Aggression is not violence. Aggression is a challenge. You're challenging another, and you're self-developing, and you're helping the other to self-develop through challenge. And that's what wrestling is. It's challenge play. And it's challenge nurturance. Just like fathers who throw their kids far up in the air, scaring mom and sometimes the kid, you know, that's challenge play, and it's building resilience and so on. And of course, there are millions of examples of that. That's that aggression, you're challenging others and you're asserting yourself. But violence is when you're trying to destroy the physical person of the other and or the core self of the other. Where you're bullying is real bullying is violent, because it's trying to destroy the core self. It's, you know, of the other, but that's not aggression. And we have to get back to separating aggression and violence, even in our conversations, even in schools. You know, we got to get principals to say to parents, okay, now here's what aggression is. Aggression is not violence. So dodgeball is aggression play and it's not violence, but that boy or those three boys attacking that boy or girl over in the corner of the playground, that was violence, right? That's the right. distinction.
Right. Yes. And again, it's so important to understand that and to recognize too, that particular for boys, they can wrestle and they can have this aggressive play. And more often than not, it is a sign of love and respect. That's how they bond. And we sometimes miss that, and parents will tear wrestling kids apart only to find out these guys really love each other, and they were just having fun.
Yeah, and even guys who don't like each other, you know, will get in a fight with each other, and they'll love and respect each other after that fight.
That's right, that's right.
And you know, nature is doing that for a reason. So just adding on to what you just said.
That's great. Now, one of the things that we see with helicopter parenting, and none of the people who listen to The Wonder of Parenting would fall into that category, right?
None of us. Neither you nor I either.
No. I'm a helicopter grandpa. There's some truth to that. But part of that is not only, you know, sort of limiting, you know, risky play or whatever, but it's also overscheduling kids to the point of robbing them of free-range play. So from a brain perspective, mm-hmm. what are the benefits of structure? And what are the benefits of free range play, and how do you find a good balance?
Yeah, great. So one of the key things about free range play is the same key thing we started out at the very beginning with Leslie's question, which is, what is safety? What is safety? What do people mean by safety? And so I would argue that the safest child is actually going to be the child who grows up to be a mature adult, because then that child is going to have safety throughout life.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Whereas the unsafest child is the child who's going to grow up not to be a mature adult and therefore not be able to function as an adult. Well, free range play helps. It feels less safe to parents, and I totally get that. Free range play feels less safe, and it feels more safe to parents if they can organize the play because they can control it. And okay, I've set up this play date for you at this place. My dear, right? Or girl, boy, whoever, I've set this up, and the other parents and I have set this up for this play date, and we know it's going to be safe. But in fact, I would argue that free range play, even though it feels unsafe, because the parent, especially our parents nowadays, will feel like, well, okay, I'm sending my kids off into that field to play, and something could happen to them. So it feels unsafe. But I would argue it, in fact, creates more safety in the long term, because what we know very well from brain research is that free-range play helps develop the pathways between the limbic and the frontal. So the very thing we said earlier applies here again. A lot of what we're trying to do through play is develop the pathways, fill out those pathways so that kids become mature adults and they rely more on the frontal for mature executive decisions, good character, et cetera. Well, free range play does that. And there was some research that I have in both Saving Our Sons and The Minds of Girls, and good references for it in the back. This research that showed that it was actually free range play that closed more synapses to the frontal than did organized play. Now, that's in one particular set of studies, but I think it's fascinating. And then the folks who ran the study sort of guessed at why, and what they guessed at was, well, if you're out free range playing, everything's problem solving, right? There's no one there, you know, who has organized this for you, and there's no adults hanging around who you can rely on to problem solve. And even when you get in an emotional moment with the person you're playing with, where you're really mad at that person, you still have to problem solve that, right? Because the adults are not going to stop you from yelling at each other or from grimacing or from, you know, they're not going to stop that because they're not around. It's free range. So the assumption is, it fits very well with the other brain research, that it's closing those synapses because you have to problem solve all the time when you're in free range play, and in organized play, you don't have to as much.
I think about when I was a kid, and of course, this is, you know, all these young generations have to listen to us old guys talk about the good old days. But, you know, I grew up on a cul-de-sac. And the first neighborhood I was in was not a cul-de-sac, but in both neighborhoods, man, during the summertime, mom said, go out and play and come back for supper. And, you know, the whole time we're outside, we'd have check-in times, of course, but we're outside, we're making up games, we're playing with other kids, we're out in nature. Of course, we only had black and white TVs at that point, and our phones were stuck to the wall. So it was a very different world. But there was something about not only the problem solving, which is really an eye-opening discovery, but I also think, too, about how we had to work at building relationships with all kinds of different kids. My parents weren't choosing to have me over at Brian's house and forcing me, so to speak, to get along with Brian, I had to get along with all the neighbor kids. Mm-hmm. And of course, in my family with five siblings, three brothers right in a row, we had to learn how to get along just with each other, let alone all the kids. So there seems to be something about being outside, being on our own, having to build relationships, problem solve, that does offer a very different kind of experience for our kids. And yet, I looked at how my kids grew up. Of course, we're in Phoenix, so it's really hot in the summer. You don't send kids out for 12 hours and tell them to go play. You have to be more structured. It's indoors. But even then, you can do free play in the house, right?
Yep. They can build build forts. They can have the area that's their area for today. Maybe the family has a family room, or maybe it's their bedrooms. Whatever it is, mom, dad, et cetera, can say, okay, those are your areas for today. You just play, and no devices, just play. And they can play in those areas if it's hot outside. Absolutely.
Well, and there's got to be something, I would imagine, to use that word, about the imagination for kids. When you're free range play, you've got to use your imagination.
Well, see, and that's that's a very important thing. The imagination, you know, is housed up there in the top of the brain, right? And we're wanting it to develop, and it's part of how we connect the emotive centers to the frontal, right? People can imagine things, and then their brain thinks about those things that they imagined. And where's that thinking going on? Well, that thinking is actually going on right up at the top of the brain, which is where we're maturation. We're trying to get it all connected to the top of the brain. So imagination is a really big deal. And even imagination that goes weird, you know, even gross imagination where kids draw things that parents think are weird. I mean, if a child, okay, got to have a caveat, of course, that if a child draws something it's early sexuality, you know, you'd think sexual abuse, or if it's incredibly violent, then you got to be thinking, was this child traumatized? So that's true. But in terms of a lot of what kids draw, you know, a lot of what they imagine, it's part of this free range, and it's part of the imagination developing. And it's, you know, it's good to encourage. If we're worried about something, we're worried. But otherwise, it's really good to encourage the imagination. And that's another place where reading comes in. You know, free reading, just saying you're going to read for an hour. You read whatever you want, but you read. That also can be like play, especially if they're reading. Game of Thrones is big now, anything, Harry Potter, any of those things are triggering imagination. Then that triggers their play. So then they go, oh, let's do that. Let's play Quidditch. So then they figure all that out outside or in the room of their house. And so reading is actually a neat part of that.
Well, I think every parent has had the same experience, and every grandparent has had this experience of watching their kids just suddenly play. And you don't have to be involved, and they're off in their own little world. And that's so delightful to see that happening. And you know that that's really what kids are wired to do.
Yep.
And you know, there are times when we watch our kids playing a video game, we think, wow, that's amazing. But what's really amazing is just seeing our kids playing outside or playing in the house, building a Lego creation of their own. And you just know intuitively something's going on in the brain that's really good at that point for them. So, Michael, this has been really, really helpful.
Thanks, Tim.
I guess one final question would be, and we just did a podcast on, you know, how to help our schools. But you've got Leslie asking the question, you know, how can I – she didn't ask it this way, but embedded in there is, how do we help our schools open up a little bit to more free-range play, a little bit more risky play, recognizing the amount of pressure our schools and school systems are under with lawsuits?
Right. Yeah, it's a double educational effort. So parent like Leslie understands this. She's right about what she's thinking. So then she goes out and generally it would start with parents of other boys, because it's generally other boys who are getting in trouble for this kind of play. So she forms a team with these other parents of other boys, and as well as the guys, her husband or her partner, you know, they all kind of form a team, and they meet together and they talk about it, and they form a team, and they educate themselves on the language. For someone like her or anyone who's thinking about this, get the book Saving Our Sons. It's got all the language in it, you know, to answer this question. And then they're preparing themselves to go into the school and to talk to the principal, vice principal, head of school, assistant head, whoever is the correct person, talk to that person and say, hey, you know, we're a team of people and we represent a lot of people who think this way. And here are science-based resources. Can your school do a book study? Can your teachers do a book study on this? You know, what can you do to advance this conversation? Because we're all frustrated by it and it's not really fair to our kids. And in fact, the school is incorrect in its science about this, but you got to say it really nicely.
Yes.
So then you get, yeah. And then you start getting, and I'm saying this, by the way, from experience, because this is what people do. This works. This is, we have decades, right? 25 years of this working, right? This effort working through our Gurian Institute team. So we know this works. So, the principals, they listen to it, you know, their parents themselves, they're logical people. They go, okay, we got some science behind this. Okay, so then that's important for them. And then you know, everyone looks at it. There's a book study. There's professional development. There's some training. And then you know, this is now fanning out so that there are parent education evenings, which every school has. These evenings where 20 or 30 or 40 parents come together for 45 minutes on a Thursday night, and they listen to a speaker. Well, this is what gets talked about in a few of those nights, you know. So then more parents go, oh, wait a minute, I'm a little bit wrong on this. I don't have to be a helicopter. And it grows, and it takes a year or two, but then it kind of moves through that system. And as it moves through that system, if it's a independent school or private school or something like that where they don't have a, it's not public, they don't have a school board, then the, you know, change can be instituted sort of within a year in that system because pretty much everyone gets on board. And even these parents who are helicopter parents but don't realize they are, even they, if they have sons, even they will go, oh, wait, yeah, okay, I get the logic of that. I want my kid to mature. Okay, I get that logic. And so then they'll sort of back off. So it takes some time, but it really helps. And the parents of girls are also helped by this, and the girls are also helped. All of this, you know, allows girls more freedom to be who they are, right, through play. But generally it happens because it's the boys getting in trouble.
And we want to encourage you to, especially if you've got a good relationship with the teachers of your children, put them onto this podcast. Because even though we're focused on parenting, these are issues that our teachers are dealing with in the classroom all the time.
Yep.
And this is episode 45, for those of you who might say, yeah, I need to have my son's teacher, my daughter's teacher listen to this. This is episode 45, Wonder of Parenting, and have them take a listen. And that might get some change going as well. Michael, before we head on out, we want to draw people's attention once again to our website, wonderofparenting.com, where people like Leslie can leave us questions. They can connect with our Facebook page. They can find resources there to help them as parents. And, of course, a link to our sponsors, A Place of Hope, the center up in the Seattle area. And also, finally, we've got it on. Now we've been talking about this Patreon site that you have where you're providing a lot of resources for parents. And some of them probably been looking for it, and it wasn't up on our website. We found it, or we got it on there now. So for $10 a month, people will get what from you?
Well, yeah, people, you'll get access to the online course, which is 11 hours with me and all sorts of material there. You get video clips that are just for members. So those come out first week of every month that I do. You get access then to the blogs. You get to sign up for all of our weekly blogs. So there's a lot there. So if you go to wonderofparenting.com and you click that Patreon link, then you'll see a list of all the stuff you get, and it's just $10 a month.
And you can get in, you can get out anytime, and we encourage you to try it. I think you'll like it. And if you've been enjoying these podcasts, I know you're going to enjoy Michael's video clips. Well, Michael, thank you very, very much for your insights again.
Oh, thank you, Tim.
And thank you all for listening. And please tell some friends about Wonder of Parenting. And the more people listening in, the more we can keep this revolution for our boys and our girls going. You have a great week. We'll be with you again for episode number 46 coming up in a week.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. and it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah Quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.